This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition Wonder Woman. Special edition iFanboy show on Wonder Woman. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hi, all.
And we're here talking about Wonder Woman, the latest DC Universe film from Warner Brothers. There'll be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film, pause the show and come back later. You don't want to be spoiled.
And you know this is a big event when Josh has seen it already.
Just everything is upside down in the world. And a DC Wonder Woman movie is out.
Oh. You felt like you needed to move your calendar around to accommodate.
Yeah, I just needed a distraction.
Well, as of 12 hours ago, when you said you were doing it, Ron and I were still making B and C plans just in case.
Which I said, good move.
Yeah. Hey, listen, logistics, production logistics. We got to be prepared for anything. But so Wonder Woman finally, after a successful run in TV in the 70s and lots of think pieces on the web about why there isn't a Wonder Woman movie. We finally have one.
Oh, and thank God those are done.
And after stealing the show from Batman v Superman last year, the only bright spot in that movie for the most part.
Literally and figuratively.
This was very highly anticipated, directed by Patty Jenkins, her first major motion picture. She comes from Game of Thrones, written by Alan Heinberg.
She did Monster. Yeah, I think that's bigger than Game of Thrones.
Her first major motion picture, not an indie film.
Yeah,
but it was interesting because I didn't know who she was. Looked her up, you know, one feature film and a lot of TV since 2003. Not bad TV, good TV, but interesting choice, I thought.
Yes.
Great choice. Great. I read an article, I forget where, it might have been in Wired or Entertainment Weekly or whatever, about the journey she took for it, where apparently she talked to them about it years ago, and then it didn't happen for whatever reason, et cetera. You know, and so it's good to see the Monster was, what, 2005?
Three.
Yeah, so what, 13 years ago, right, or 14 years ago? She's been in the mix for at least 10 years on Wonder Woman. So it's great to see not only did it come through, but wow, she hit a solid triple, if not a home run.
All she had to do was wait for Joss Whedon to say no.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oops.
This film starts off in the present day, flashes back to World War I from that photograph we saw in Batman v Superman. And we spend most of our time learning the origin of Wonder Woman in the context of World War I. And that is the setup. Chris Pine is Steve Trevor. Danny Houston is the bad guy, Ludendorff.
By the way, I was convinced was the Provasic villain from The Fugitive, but he is not. And I feel like this is not the first time I've made this mistake, by the way, too.
It's Danny Houston.
No, I know, but he looks like the guy who is the bad guy in The Fugitive with Provasic.
He doesn't.
Yes, he does. Look at them side by side. You can see why I would make the mistake. I thought, anyway, go on.
Eric Ludendorff was a real World War II German general.
Oh, cool.
So it's not, it was really interesting that they, I don't know how based on the real character it is, but it's really interesting to me that they used an actual name.
Well, Wonder Woman's real too, right? I mean, yeah. She's a real Amazonian princess who fought in World War I.
This is based on a true story, Ron.
Right, yeah, this is all fact.
So let's let's dive in. My overall thought is that I thought it was 80 to 85% terrific.
Yep.
So basically, once Gal Gadot shows up as young Diana, until Ares goes full on Ares with the armor and the fire, I was like, yep. Wow, they figured it out. They figured out how to make a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Then I thought somebody took a giant mug of Zack Snyder, and I feel bad about making that joke now with his family awfulness, but they poured it.
Doesn't change his work.
They poured
doesn't
it,
change,
in,
it. Doesn't change the aesthetic.
They poured it into the movie for the final bit, and then yeah. I was like, and then it got fine at the end after once the flags showed up.
I would 100% agree with you, Connor. Like I said a couple minutes ago, Patty Jenkins hit a solid triple, like a standing triple, mm-hmm. or possibly a home run that just went over the fence. You know, in baseball parlance, I think that the middle part of the movie is fantastic. And I agree with you on the end. It falls into Zack Snyder rubble fight.
Yeah.
And additionally, Ludendorff and the evil chemist at times got a little too mustache twirly.
The evil chemist really didn't fit. She was never the main villain.
And they didn't make a choice on her.
Yeah, agreed. Yep.
At the end, you know, like, was she evil or was she not evil? Because they didn't really give us that. They just sort of made her look scared when they weren't really. That's a real concern.
There was one scene in the middle where they cut back to her and she was very mustache twirly. And I was like, and then they went away again. So I'm fine
with that. I just want them to commit to it.
And for me, there was the moment when and I want to hear what Josh thinks, but for me, the worst moment of this was when Ludendorff and her talk to the German generals who are about to, you know, give in to the war, and they kill them and they shut the door and Ludendorff threw in the gas mask and the chemist says, oh, the gas mask won't do anything. And he goes, but they don't know that. And they both start laughing like a Batman 66 villain. And I was like, oh, we didn't need that at all. But that was the only black mark on it. As far as I'm concerned, I give it a solid, solid 85.
Hold on, we're going to get the ratings at the end, Ron.
Oh yeah. No. But I mean, you know, I was agreeing with your percentage.
You literally already rated it.
I was agreeing with your percentage, like solid 85 to 90%, great movie. Really liked it. Josh, what do you think?
So, first of all, the thing at the end, I know what you're saying. I guess that is a Zack Snyder-y thing, but I actually kind of didn't mind that for a couple of reasons. One, she's kind of punching down through the whole movie if she's only fighting German soldiers. And if they're going to tell this story where she's a god, then she's got to fight a god at the end. I thought David Thewlis was a really interesting choice for that because he's not the typical physical example.
Let's get to that because I have a lot of thoughts on that.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So, you know, at the end, I thought, so you thought Zack Snyder, but I thought, oh, they're doing Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang's story here.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
I mean, purely aesthetically, it looked like the Doomsday fight at the end.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I don't mean the idea of her fighting Ares. I just mean the look of it suddenly went much different. It looked more like a video game.
Sort of.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, fighting Ares made perfect sense. I actually liked the reveal. Like, we thought it was not the Provasic guy, but we thought it was, you know, but turned out to be somebody else and all that stuff. And there's specifics with that, which I want to get to. But just the battle itself became like X-Men, where it's like, you know, she's got this great fighting skill and powers and stuff like that. But instead, we're just going to throw rubble at each other. And then she's going to win the fight by some power we don't even know about, capturing the lightning and shooting it like a beam. You know what I mean? Like, they set up that she used the gauntlets to do that energy pulse, but she didn't collect energy and then shoot it back
but
that was a new power. That was a new power.
It was, but the whole point was that she was discovering what she was and that she was a god, and she should have had every single power that he does. So every time he does something silly, she gets to do something silly, and we don't really know what the rule set for that is. So I'm that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, okay. I was bothered.
You're talking about in a world where, you know, she has to be a really big deal. And so they're piling things on, and they have a blank slate, really.
Yeah.
You know, she has to be as powerful as anybody else, as Superman, as whoever. So none of that bugged me. What I found with this movie was that there were a lot of things that should have bugged me, but I didn't really care for various reasons. So, like, in the beginning, there were things where if I was really nitpicking, I would be like, oh, that was kind of doesn't make sense. So at the beginning, all the Germans come through to Themyscira, I forget.
Yeah, Themyscira.
And there's a big warship.
Yeah.
Where did that thing go?
It looked like it was listing.
It looked like it was sinking. Okay.
Yeah, either way, like, so there was that. Like, Germans have terrible security in this movie.
They did in the real war, too, but...
Right, but the thing is...
But can you get back to Themyscira, though? You're right, that didn't make any sense. What's the point of the shield if you can just go through the shield?
Right, yeah.
You're telling me at no point, no boat went through the shield?
Either way, with any of that stuff, like, because it was sort of set up as sort of a serial, you know, like an old-style sort of adventure romp, and I was willing to sort of give it that comic book, like, whatever. You know, right. Like, that doesn't matter, because that wasn't the point.
The other thing that I noticed that didn't bother me, but it was kind of glaring, was that it was really similar to Captain America, the First Avenger.
Well, it was funny, because I was just talking about this to a friend of mine this morning, and it was almost like they took the best elements of Captain America and Thor and mixed them into one.
Right, but I mean, like, she had her own Howling Commandos, the guy dies in a plane totally. At the end. Like, it was very... Yeah. Very similar. No, I didn't have a problem with that.
Even the dude at the end who crashed for no reason.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Again. I was like, no, don't, no, come on.
And his name is Chris.
Jump out.
But it didn't bother me because I love that. I think watching it unfold, there are a lot of similarities between Captain America and Wonder Woman. So I'm okay with this.
A lot. Yeah, I'm okay with that too. I mean.
It was a better World War I movie than Captain America was a World War II movie. In fact, I would as far as say, I was like, it was a pretty good World War I movie, which made me actually doubt its possible success at the box office. I was like, people want a World War I movie? Like, to me, I was like,
I like that. I like that World War One is such a random, bleak kind of choice, and I like, you know, like, and that's the one thing about it is that, you know, the belief that Ares was, you know, tainting and you know, kind of motivating people, and once she destroyed them, like, we still had World War II, but I guess that's the point that Steve made to her is that men are not what she believed, that there's evil in all men, and that's all, you know, that sort of thing. But
he didn't do anything other than you know, whisper them or whatever, so it wasn't their fault.
It was still, man, that was what was great about it.
Yeah.
You could see that coming a mile away. But I did like that World War One was investigated a little bit. Like, Harley had night terrors, and she saw all the wounded. So that she saw that there was a horror. It wasn't just like, the war is awesome, and we're going to go save the day. It was like, this is taking a toll on everybody who was involved in this.
They went to that no man's land front thing that was so, you know, they showed like a horse stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
That was a real thing. You know, they... It really, like, it's a war that people don't know anything about, or you know, that's why they can.
Well, and that was also just like, also as awful as World War II was, World War I was so brutal, and like the between the mustard gas and all that kind of stuff, and like the change. Well, we're not going to talk about World War I. We know this, but the changeover of military technology and stuff like that, just the brutality. I actually found myself, you know, I wanted more World War I. Right, like, so we got.
Well, there hasn't been a great World War One movie in since Paths of Glory. So
we got the glimpse of it when they're trying to get to where they need to go, and they're going through the trenches, and she goes, "No, we're going to fight," and leads everybody, and like that was like amazing. And then the whole village fight was nearly amazing. I have some issues with some of the CG in this. There was a couple of shots that were really rubbery anatomy doll looking versus smooth. Some of the
aesthetic they went for.
Yeah, no.
All those movies have those things.
Yeah, maybe it's because I saw it at the Alamo in Brooklyn on one of their big, big, big screens. So I don't know if it changes depending. Josh, I'm assuming you saw it in a small theater because you live in a small place.
Medium-sized screen.
But,
it wasn't like.
But I mean, there were a couple of shots that were like this. I thought the effects were cool. I love the fighting style of the Amazons. I love the way they showed that. Robin Wright kicking ass with a bow and arrow was awesome, right?
That Mongolian horse archer thing.
Yeah, like that. Awesome. And the bending off the horse and shooting the arrows, mm-hmm. and then the dropping the shield and jumping and landing and bouncing off the shield and then doing something like the combos and stuff like that were really cool. But every now, like, it was almost like every 10th CG shot felt, for me, had that rubbery, oh, that's fake and took me out of it moment. And it wasn't just me. I asked other people.
Yeah, but that's literally every superhero movie has that problem. Because that's just the technology is still there. Yeah, I'm used to it now at this point. We have four of these a year, so it's fine. Let's talk about how awesome Gal Gadot is and how
perfect. How like great.
She lights up the screen. And she is a great, great Wonder Woman. I love the fact that she has an accent. They didn't try to Americanize Wonder Woman. We talked about this back in Batman Superman, but this is really glaring in this movie. She's, first of all, drop dead gorgeous, but you never for a second believe she wouldn't destroy you in a fist fight.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is what Wonder Woman has to portray. She's funny. She's charming. She handled everything. She handled the comedy. She handled the action. She handled the emotion.
Yep.
She's Christopher Reeve.
It was great in that, like, she is Wonder Woman. Like, she completely encompassed the character and was engaging, and we walked out of the movie and, like, one of the people I was with, can we just talk about how beautiful she is? And, like, we're talking about her profile. Like, there are so many profile shots because her profile is so great.
And she wasn't like, she didn't look like, you know, the typical, you know, white model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She had a whole different face that was, it was an otherness to it. Like, it was really interesting. I really watched the whole movie from this sort of point of view of, like, they've got to put across, like, a different message than in almost every other movie like this. And how are they handling it, you know, like, with a female protagonist and sort of in our world and everything. So I find that really interesting to sort of see how they, like, she's gorgeous and but it wasn't, I don't know. She was, like, sexy, but it wasn't.
She wasn't sexualized, but she was still sexy, right. And there was still talk of sex talk, and the guys still stumbled around her because she is so beautiful. But you can't deny that. But also, she was never in the position of being the object, as opposed to Chris Pine, who was naked. And I would say this: it's a great thing she's so great, because Chris Pine would have stole this movie from a lesser Diana.
I was about to say, let's go through the cast, because I thought Chris Pine was fantastic. He was great too. I mean, like, and the problem is, it's hard to shake, like, oh, it's Kirk, you know, because
he's playing,
you know,
Kirk because he's really good at playing that character, and that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yep. And it was, I mean, and the interplay between them were great. Honestly, I think some of the best part, I mean, it's real easy to play up the fish out of water aspect. That's like kind of like what they pulled from the Thor movie, I think, in terms of, you know, like, here's this, you know, she's never been to London and all this sort of stuff. But those scenes, right after they leave Themyscira or whatever, up until the last kind of going at the German castle kind of thing, like, all that stuff, like, her on not understanding the world, him trying to explain it to, the exasperation of it, like it felt real and natural, you know. And I think both of them deserve a tremendous credit, but you're right, Connor, Chris Pine would totally have overshadowed a lesser actress. I think
he is great. He's great, and, like, this is totally his thing. I mean, this is what he did. If you think, you know, The Finest Hours, he's a capable, dedicated military person. The you know, that's what Kirk is.
What's The Finest Hours?
Oh come on.
Is that that movie nobody saw?
I saw it, and Josh saw it.
Coast Guard says you got to go out. They don't say anything about coming back in.
The movie they made for the two of you, and only the two of you saw it.
Listen, this is a World War I movie with the same guy, and if they hadn't put Wonder Woman in it, then Connor and I still would have been the only two.
And you know what? They also play. You could, on one hand, you could say it was heavy-handed in the gender politics. But on the other hand, it needed to be heavy-handed.
I thought it was the right balance.
And they hit it hard because they had to hit it hard. This is the first Wonder Woman movie. That's what it's about. So,
see,
you know,
in the room.
I walked into my office this morning, and the first person who saw me was one of my coworkers, and she asked me if Chris Pine is naked, and I said basically yes. So they're going down their lane. They know exactly what they're doing. He's playing the girlfriend role, the quote unquote girlfriend role, and doing it wonderfully. And also, the audience, I saw it, and now I get granted, I saw it in Hollywood, and it's different than a lot of places, but it was probably 80% women and gay men. And I think that's
awesome. That's great.
On the other hand, probably not great for its box office potential. However, the audience I saw it with, the women went berserk for this movie.
Yeah.
They went nuts at every big moment, every line about gender, the line about not needing men for sexual pleasure. Like, it was right down their wheelhouse. Megan loved it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I went to see, you know, I went with my girlfriend and her friend and her husband, and everybody was smiling and thumbs up afterwards, you know, like, it was, you know, and it's not, you know, it was a funny kind of thing, because I was planning on seeing it for this, and I normally, you know, these movies are not my significant other's cup of tea.
Yeah.
But her friend texted her and was like, should we go see this together? And she's like, yeah. So we made a night of it. And it was great. I mean, it was great to see. I forgot to look at right before the movie started, but I felt like the majority of the audience was female. They had set up a step and repeat before the theater props to take pictures on, you know, and like all stuff like really, really did a good job with it. But also just like it, just, you know, like it just felt that kind of empowerment, which is awesome, which is what we want.
I haven't seen this many audience T-shirts since The Force Awakens. Like, it was like a Wonder Woman T-shirt central.
Also, I got excited at the. See, the thing was, what I was thinking about this during the movie was that whether or not, like, so my nieces are, you know, teenager and now preteen. They're getting older, so I think that they can handle the violent stuff like this. But like, I couldn't help getting choked up in the beginning with like little Diana, like
she was awesome,
echoing the warriors and all that sort of stuff, and like thinking like, wow, what this must be for young girls growing up to see that, you know, like that you know, like that got me more excited. But then as the movie went on, I was like, oh, I don't know if young girls can see this movie because it's so violent.
It was no blood.
Yeah, there was no blood. The feeling on The Force Awakens, again, with Rey, it was a very similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let's not lose sight of some of the things that we need to talk about. So David Thewlis, who is Sir Patrick. Thulis is Sir Patrick. And there was a point in the movie where I was like, oh, no, he's Ares. And I thought...
Oh, you saw it.
Right at the beginning, I was like, there's a bad guy.
Even though, you know, they hid it till later, I thought that was a great choice because he is, as Josh said earlier, so not your image of what Ares is supposed to be, this little tweedy British man with a British mustache. And I love the fact that...
Unless you've been watching Fargo this year.
He still wouldn't be my idea of Ares.
Right.
But I loved even in the flashback to him as the young buff Ares, he still had the mustache.
Yep.
Which made me laugh.
Well, that's what I didn't quite understand was that I like the fact that they made him Ares, right? Yeah. Like I like I didn't see it coming. I didn't believe that what's his face Pravasic was Ares either. I didn't think he was Ares either, but I was going more on that there is no Ares, you know, like
set up for season two. I mean, for the second movie.
Wow, you're right there?
I thought they were setting it up where she would learn that Ares wasn't responsible because men have war in their hearts, and then Ares would show up or be teased for the next one, but.
Right. Well, that's what I thought. Right. And then they revealed that it was him. And I was like, oh, great. You know, great kind of swerve. Again, I didn't see it coming. Very cool. And then they showed kind of the flashbacks of him kind of like floating behind them, influencing the chemist and influencing Pravasic and all that other stuff. Right. And I was like, okay, cool. So he's Ares. I buy that. And then I was expecting there to be some sort of transformation or maybe like more like Sauron-esque when he's just the armor or something like that. But no, they stuck with the dude and the mustache all the way to the end.
That was great.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And actually, you know what's funny? I just think of this now. I thought there was a plot hole, but now I'm thinking about there wasn't a plot hole. The only part in the beginning, I thought the exposition dump was a little slow, but then again, I know all the expositions, so maybe it's because I know it. When they're talking about how Zeus's last act, he protected the mascara and then died, and then later on she says, well, Zeus brought you to life. It has been nagging me till this moment that I thought there was a plot hole, but it wasn't because Zeus was actually her father. Never mind. Continue.
I'm glad we worked out. I'm glad we're in.
I had a revelation right now on the show. That's
okay, cool. So moving a little bit on, though. So yeah, I just thought the commitment to the mustache was good. We're avoiding the elephant in the room, Josh.
You and Brenner.
What was Spud doing in this movie?
Don't matter. He's a drunken Scotsman. He was very sad, and then he could shoot people from far away. Very good. I like him. The thing about him is he's a bit of a perfectionist.
Sorry. I can't tell you how excited I got, not only when I saw Spud, but then also the guy who played Samir was fantastic.
Saeed, yeah.
What's her name from The Office?
Oh, Dawn Jinsley. Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute.
She's fantastic, right? Lucy Davis. Lucy something? Lucy Davis. Yeah, she's great. And she's actually a character from the old 40s comics.
Edda Candy. She's been in all the stories.
Edda Candy, yeah. I love the team. And it, like, is so...
The Howling Commandos.
Yeah, well, it's like, is that the beginning of the Blackhawks?
No.
The dude who played Samir tweeted out a photo of him next to the dude from the Blackhawks with the little pencil-thin mustache.
Maybe he's hoping it is, but like I didn't get that. I didn't get that sense. I mean, I guess they could do that if they wanted to. I didn't get the sense that it was.
Yeah.
I like the fact that normally in these movies, when you have Wonder Woman and Chris Pine and Steve Trevor, and then you got a bunch of various nationality soldiers with them, normally how it happens is all the various nationality soldiers die, and then Steve Trevor and Diana are left alive to be together.
Oh, yeah.
They went the other way, where Steve died and none of the other soldiers died. I really like that too as well. It subverted my expectations. I was like, well, one of these adorable Scottish or Moroccan or American Indian guys is going to die, but none of them did.
Yeah,
so,
I like that. I like that swerve. But no, I thought the team was great, and there was, you know, the bit of humor and all that stuff was really cool. It just was strong. Like that middle part of that movie, it was funny because one of my friends this morning was saying, he saw it last night. He's like, I want to see it again. And I was like, I don't know if I want to see it again, but if that middle part was on TV, I'd stop and watch that. You know, like it was,
I liked that they subverted all of the expectations. So there wasn't a thing where they were like, we're not following a girl. Right. They didn't bother with that. That would have been the opposite thing. They talked to the Native American guy and he's like, I'm not really on anybody's side here. Yeah. And they kind of went into that, you know, the one guy, he's super talented. He's like, yep, I'm the wrong color to be an actor. And let's talk about all these inequalities in a way that was actually germane to what was happening to a certain extent. And it sort of given her an idea of the world instead of just rah, rah.
It was germane to the Germans.
What I loved was
Well, hold on, Ryan. I think you're minimizing the middle part. It's not the middle part for me. It's like
no, it's more 80%
of the movie, just with a little bit in the end that I didn't love.
Yeah, but. I guess I'm breaking the movie up into thirds, but that middle third is bigger than a third. Like there's the Themyscira scenes, then there's everything leading up to the German castle assault, and then there's the German castle scene. Like that's kind of how I kind of break the movie up.
Airfield.
It's that middle airfield. But they went to the gala. That's what started it. That's the end
of the second act.
But it's that middle part that was just so good in my mind. What I loved was I went online and I was looking to see. I'm like, all right, nerds, what Easter eggs and what, you know, kind of thing. Like, where's all the there's little to no fan service in this movie whatsoever. And it's driving the bloggers crazy. I saw so many talked about a bunch of stuff that was.
Well, it's just that they don't know it.
Etta Candy is just like having Alfred in the movie. She's been Wonder Woman's assistant since the 40s.
That's not fan service. Not Greg Rucka didn't giggle because they had Etta Candy in it.
I think,
you know what I mean? You know, like
it was a lot of World War One fan service.
Well, yeah, but that's a very small audience.
I know. But
people are scrambling to find fan service so much
there
in
really
that.
Isn't much, yeah.
In the opening scene when the Wayne Enterprises van pulls up to the Louvre to bring the original photo to Diana from Bruce, the license plate is JL-828-something-something. They're like Justice League. It's like, oh God, nerds, just move on.
Well, you know, here's what my version of that fan service is. So I didn't know anything about this going in. Like, I didn't know who was directing it or who wrote it or whatever. When I got to the end, I thought, wow, whoever wrote that really knew what they were doing. And I watched, and Alan Heinberg's name popped up, and I went, oh, that is...
Damn it, Heinberg! There's a callback. There's a callback for long-time listeners.
but then I watched, and, you know, you watch the thing, and you see Geoff Johns' name up there. And I thought a couple of things. I think this is the first movie where I heard his voice.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And specifically,
the ice cream scene was straight out of his Justice League book with Jim Lee.
Okay.
Like literally lifted from that. Anyway, go on.
No, I'm sure. But more specifically, thematically, I remember a long time ago, a writer who's a big deal writer went to a writer's conference retreat thing with DC guys. And he was talking about how Geoff Johns dealt with the characters and the way that that conversation started. And he went around and he asked everybody to give them one word that represented each character. And like the example that was used was Batman. And they were like trying to figure out what it was. And Geoff Johns is like, Batman's word is justice. That's what he's about. That's what it is. Right. Diana, Wonder Woman, what's her word? It's love. And so they hammered the shit out of that all the way through the end without feeling like, wow, they just keep saying that. But that is her thing. That was always her thing. And that is the way that he looks at telling these stories. And that came through 100%. And Johns and Heinberg, they used to have a studio together. So they're very close. And I'm sure they collaborated a lot. So I felt that, wow, this is the comic book version. This is what people thought they were going to get when Geoff Johns was moved up to that creative control, whatever.
And you hope that's the case. You hope that that's going to start bleeding into these.
Because it worked.
I still can't put too much hope into Justice League. This isn't coming out in just a few months, but I'm hoping some of this bleeds into that. We know she will be great. You know, we know that. Yeah. It's just a matter of will the rest of it, or will it be too Snyder-fied, and what will it mean that Joss Whedon's taking over some of these reshoots? Like, we don't know what any of that means. We just hope.
Yeah.
We just hope. We hope, like Andy Dufresne.
To go back to the Zack Snyder fight, the one thing about this movie is that even, you know, it was very much apparent at the end, but the entire movie has got the Zack Snyder Instagram filter over it. Like that DC aesthetic.
I don't think that's the case. It was pretty bright and shiny.
At times, the overarching was murky.
It was there, but to a lesser extent. But the difference was, like, when she pops out in her uniform, and it was... like the red and blue, and you could, like, it was actually sort of, it stood out from all that. Mm-hmm. It was almost like the visual was actually breaking that cliche.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Maybe. She was on the front. It was all gray and muddy and brown, and she took off the black coat, and there she was in a bright, shiny. I didn't think that at all. I didn't find it to be that, you know, where everything is muted. I didn't think, even, you know, she had that bright blue dress on. Like, I thought this was a very bright colored movie.
I think it still has
a feel of these movies, and maybe
vestiges of it. But it was a big step forward, and I think, you know, they were clearly trying to get away from it, but they also have to stick with it to a certain extent. It was worlds better than it should have been.
So the only other two fan servicey things that I want to touch upon was apparently the God Killer sword that, you know, Deathstroke the Terminator had a God Killer sword, like just in terms of the name and the idea of being a sword. No, exactly. I don't think that's one. But the one that I picked up on during the movie, and I was glad to see other people picked up on it, which I'm sure you guys picked up on it, was the not fan service, but the homage or the nod once again to the impact that Donner Superman has on all DC movies. The scene in London in the alley with the German spies and the bullet stop was like, I was like, whoa, Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Clark catches the bullet when him and Lois are being mugged, like that moment was like, that was a really elegant, nicely way to nod back at what's come before. And I
they
thought
they should
that
have had Edda say that's a bad outfit to her when she got out of the.
Say, Dad, that's a bad outfit. I actually really liked her perspective. It was, I mean, it's not very different than like the speedster perspective that we see in stuff, but like her sort of battle vision.
Yeah.
Where you see it from her point of view, like, okay, you knock that away, you do this. And they didn't really focus on showing her being super fast or her, you know, necessarily flying.
The speed up and then stop and spin the camera around and see what she's doing and then see the results, you know, like that.
It was pretty good compared to other versions of it that I've seen.
I like that. If you give me two choices, one is the sort of Nolan idea of the camera's really, really close and the action's really, really fast. You can't tell what's happening versus the slow-mo. You know, you can actually see all the fighting. I actually vastly prefer the slow-mo.
Yeah, no, I actually prefer the bullet time-esque, you know, kind of matrix-y kind of, you know, the stop and spin over the, it's so fast, like the frame rate problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that a lot of the Marvel movies has, when the fighting is going and it's going something you just don't know. Or, you know, like, and like the thing is, like, honestly, it's most like the Transformer movies where it's just this fast, speedy flashing of metal hitting each other. And like, I got a little bit of that at the end in the last fight because it goes back to the rubble fight and all the stuff like that. But the World War One fights and the village fight and all that sort of stuff was just was great. And I loved all, and I said it before, all the Amazon training and the fight on the beach and all the stuff like that was awesome.
Yeah, this is terrific.
Yeah.
This is really, really terrific. I was very happy coming out of it. They really nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I was saying how there's a low bar set now for DC movies, right? So like the prospect of doing well was not that it was easy, but it's like, you know, I go after Suicide Squad, after Batman v Superman, after all that, you know, crap going into this, I was really hopeful that this would be good. But like putting that all aside, it's up there in terms of the superhero movies. And I think it does Wonder Woman justice, introduces her to the world. It was still connected to what went on in Batman v Superman and then what's going to happen in Justice League because it was, you know, the flashback kind of approach. Mm-hmm. I think it all kind of meshed in well together.
What was she jumping towards at the end?
I don't know.
She's about to fly, I think.
Well, because she went out because she heard something, and then they showed the city, and they didn't see anything. I was like,
ice cream truck.
Josh is right. It was she heard the ice cream man.
Oh,
well, loves ice town. Cream now.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing about Wonder Woman. She loves ice cream.
All right.
So ratings. I give it a 4.5.
Sticking with it?
I already pre-ordered the DVD.
Of course you did. All right, I give it a 4.5 as well. Sticking with it as well. Josh?
I want to say 4.25. That feels too low. But on the spectrum of superhero movies, I'm going to go with 4.5.
All right. There you go. We all are in agreement. We're all sticking with it. If you saw Wonder Woman and you want to give your thoughts...
Oh, no, I'm not subscribing.
Go to ifanboy.com.
You're out.
Josh is not subscribed to the newsletter. And you can leave your thoughts at ifanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show. You can tell us what your thoughts on Wonder Woman were. And then you can also find our other special edition shows back there. Ron and I just released a show on Iron Fist right before this one. So you can find that show. And all other in our now reality of movies, we next look forward to Spider-Man in July. So that'll be coming soon. In the meantime, we've got our weekly Pick of the Week podcast. We look at the week's comic books. And we continue rolling on this train. I feel good about this. I feel so good. I don't want to feel too good about Justice League. That's the problem.
It was funny because coming out of this, one of the people I saw the movie with was like, all right, so what's the next one? And I was like, oh, Spider-Man Homecoming. And everyone was like, oh, that looks really good. Like the feeling was positive about, you know, that there's going to be, you know, that we're going in the right direction. Justice League, I still have concerns with. But after the trailer, my girlfriend turned to me. She goes, how do you not like that? Which I thought was very interesting. Like I think to the average viewer, I think Justice League might do better than I think it will.
I saw the trailer. I hadn't seen it. Was that a new trailer? I don't know. But I thought it was weird to play it before this movie.
The Come Together trailer.
Yeah.
The old trailer. Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of reasons not to like that trailer.
Yeah.
I didn't see that trailer.
I agree.
We got the Transformers in which the audience booed. And I was very happy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, but also Mark Wahlberg said, we got to save Prime, okay?
Yeah. I laughed.
That movie looks like such a disaster that I kind of want to see it. Like, I was like, wow, Knights? That's going to be awful.
So, yes. So, for us at least, Spider-Man Homecoming is the next movie in July.
That's great. That was a very detailed trailer. I was like, turn it off!
Too much in the trailer. Too much. All right. So, until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh, the god of boar.
Now the world is ready for you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.